This episode contains themes of suicide, mental health, and drug abuse. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of the Prime Time True Crime Podcast. I'm Robin.
I'm Brody, and today we're joined by everyone on the live stream. So hi to Nick, hi to Amanda, hi to Keelan, David, all you guys.
Whoever else is out there listening to us.
Yeah, chuck us a comment if you want to enter a question or give us some feedback. But this is a new format. We're trying out, seeing how it goes. So today we have Chris Benoit.
Yes, if you're familiar with WWE, you would know some facts about Chris's career or what happened.
I feel like the case itself is big enough that most people have a general idea of who it is. I think it was talked about mainly American, maybe not Australian.
I'm going to be honest, it was that period of time with WWE where I stopped kind of like watching. So I didn't, like, I watched a bit in it when I was little. But then through 2004 to 7, when Benoit was particularly big, and obviously things happened.
I think it was just pre-PG era, so when it was acceptable for us to watch was like later on. I think parents back then didn't really want, you know, like watching kids watch Stone Cold drink or...
I love Stone Cold Steve Austin so much.
I've never heard of this before. You never heard of Chris Benoit? All right, let's get to inform people. All right, so Robin, do you want to give us a quick background on Chris Benoit?
All right, so I've just got some quotes to start with. This case is very, I think the word is subjective. Some people sort of don't want to like talk about it because they don't want to talk about Chris's career because they feel as though it's glorifying a murderer, in a sense.
It's kind of the separate the art from the artist sort of argument.
But I think that it's okay to talk about his career and his achievements because they were before the act, I guess.
It's kind of like the whole, is it okay to listen to Chris Brown?
Is it okay to listen to Michael Jackson, is it?
Yeah, I guess that's what
is it argument. Okay, guys? Can we listen to Michael Jackson?
I mean, I do.
Billie Jean. It's a banger.
All right, so what else about him? What do you got first? Right.
So, Chris Benoit is regarded as one of the greatest wrestling and best talents and athletes across the, like, the pro wrestling...
Yeah, same. Industry?
Industry, that's the word I was looking for.
Business?
Trying not to look down at my notes too much because we're live.
That's okay. I'll read comments.
Unfortunately, most companies don't discuss his story or are allowed to, so we're going to.
When you say most companies don't discuss, you're more saying that people, like, let's just say now, Vince McMahon have told other people do not mention Chris Benoit on the product. Yeah.
Due to the circumstances of...
And I guess that... I guess I kind of see WWE's point there. They're a billion-dollar industry.
Hey, it's Jack. Sorry. Hello.
They're like a billion-dollar industry that don't really want to be tied up with, you know, obvious bad blood from the past.
Yeah, so colleagues and friends speak of Chris with praise. Vicky Guerrero described Chris as a gentle giant. And Chris Jericho states in the documentary Dark Side of the Ring that he doesn't believe that talking about Chris Benoit in a wrestling context is glorifying a murderer.
That was a Vice documentary, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Which you can watch on YouTube, Brody found for me, but...
You should probably pay for it.
Yeah, probably pay for it. It was pretty...
What do you mean? We paid for the the actual thing, didn't we, Robin?
Chris's son, David, from his first marriage, regards his father as one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. So, you know, people that...
I think he's considered pretty high up there in terms of technical wrestlers as well. Like, obviously he doesn't fit into the mold of the big bodybuilder sort of type.
SBS On Demand. Yeah, thank you, Jack.
Yep, which we definitely paid for and watched on that.
Yes. It was very glitchy on the YouTube video.
What do you mean, YouTube video?
Like, it'd be Chris Jericho talking, but it'd be Jim Ross's face. And I was like, what? That's not right.
It was a work.
All right, so we're going to start in 1964. So on May 17th, 1964, Nancy Elizabeth, I hope I pronounce this right, Toffoloney, was born in Boston, Massachusetts.
Oh, it's free. Oh,
sorry.
We illegally watched something that was free. This is like the, yeah.
On May 21st, 1967, so 3 years age difference,
yeah.
Christopher Michael Benoit was born in Montreal, Quebec.
Okay.
So I don't cover, just to be clear, I don't cover all of Chris's wrestling career because there is a lot.
He was in several industries, like New Japan... WCW, ECW.
ECW, yeah, New Japan, WCW, WWF, now WWE.
Yeah.
So there is a bit there, so I'm sorry, hardcore wrestling fans, I do skim a bit.
We are
a primetime true crime podcast. Maybe check out, what's Jack's podcast called?
Beyond the
Beyond the Buckle. Check out Beyond the Buckle. It's
available on all podcast services, I think. Don't quote me on that.
Maybe Jack will discuss it.
Or PG Wrestling Podcast.
But yeah, we're just going to... Yeah, I'm just going to sort of go through it and we'll get to the crime, which is what we're kind of here for. So, Chris grew up idolising Tom Dynamite Kid Billington and Bret Hart. When he saw them...
So, two kind of... I think they're both Canadian, so very...
Yeah, I think Bret Hart's... Yeah,
Bret Hart is definitely Canadian, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Jack. when he saw them live in 1979, he said that they really stood out to him.
So, is that what kind of influenced that technical style of his, just watching people
I think from my understanding, the Dynamite Kid did... The headbutt? What was that
called? Diving headbutt.
The diving headbutt, which is one of Chris's first sort of finisher moves moves.
Well, he has that in the Cripple Crossface. Submissions from Bret and then...
Yeah. The Dynamite Kid kind of saw what he was doing and kind of suggested that that move wasn't...
Good.
He was
ultimately right.
Yeah. All right. So, in 1984, Nancy's first husband, he enjoyed attending wrestling matches, and Nancy would go along with him and watch the wrestling matches, and through this, she was given an opportunity to model and be on covers of wrestling magazines. It was while working here she met Kevin Sullivan.
Okay.
Now, you're not familiar with Kevin Sullivan, so this is going to be...
I'm keen to learn about KS... So, KS Crickle and the Chat Boys.
So Nancy debuted in the Florida Championship Wrestling and became part of Kevin Sullivan's Satanist.
You're screwed when we do Ramirez.
Satanist gimmick.
Okay.
So he had a thing where he had like he was.
What time was this? What time stuff?
We are 1984.
So is this around the Ramirez murders?
Ramirez was late '70s, I want to say early '80s.
So was it inspired by that kind of thing, or was it just Satanism was big at the time?
Like... I guess. What was Manson doing?
that was 60s. So.
Oh not Charles Manson, Marilyn Manson.
Oh okay, yeah maybe.
My phone's locked. Yeah, they married Kevin Sullivan and Nancy in 1985, so she ended up leaving her first husband, who was taking her to the wrestling, and leaving him for Kevin.
Okay.
In 1985, the year later, Chris Benoit began his career in Stu Hart's, which I assume is there's like a Hart
family. It's like the Hart dungeon. Hart family,
yeah. Stampede Wrestling promotion. Similarities between Chris and his hero Dynamite Kid were noticeable. So as I said, flying headbutt.
Yeah, influenced
technical wrestling, that kind of thing. On November 22nd, 1985, which is it's a good date.
Okay.
No?
Moving on.
Oh, I'm not going to acknowledge that's my birthday. Sorry.
Sure, happy birthday for then.
I wasn't born. On November 22nd, 1985, Chris Benoit debuted in a mixed tag team match. In which he won by pinning his opponent.
That's normally how you win matches.
Yep, so he did that.
Do you know who the other member of the tag team was?
No.
Okay.
No.
Thanks, Rob.
Didn't get this information. I was just going through it.
I feel like you really focused on the murders here.
In 1986, Chris Benoit began training with New Japan Pro Wrestling. March 18, 1988, Chris Benoit won his first title, the Stampede British Commonwealth Mid-Heavyweight Championship.
I'm so glad WWE has kind of like tried to shorten the names of some belts lately. Like, that's a mouthful, isn't it?
In 1989, Chris started wearing a mask and using the moniker The Pegasus Kid. Chris reportedly didn't like the mask, but it later became a part of him.
Okay.
Yeah. Nancy appeared in WCW as a fan of Rick Steiner. Don't know if that name means.
I know her name's Scott Steiner, but I don't know, man. I'm not very good with 80s wrestling.
She eventually turned on him and aligned herself with off-screen husband Kevin Sullivan and adopted the name Woman.
Name was just Woman?
Woman, that was what she was known as in the wrestling.
Yeah. Just Woman?
Woman. Mm.
Strong gimmick.
And then June 1992, Chris Benoit came to World Championship Wrestling, WCW.
Yep.
So now Nancy and Chris are on the same promotion. 1993, Kevin Sullivan and Nancy started working for Extreme Championship Wrestling, so they left for ECW.
Yep. Any reason why he left? Just lack of exposure or
airtime? I know that Kevin Sullivan was a promoter at one point. I don't know what the switch was for.
Best female manager of all time. Oh.
Yeah, a lot of people in the documentary, people were saying that that's one reason she deserves to be acknowledged in the WWE Hall of Fame.
I'm assuming they both aren't.
No. Okay. She was one of the first people that sort of, you know how you've got Zelina Vega now?
I'm aware of how managers work.
Yeah, he's sort of doing that on the side of the ring. Nancy was the first one to sort of...
I'm quite quite familiar with the term of manager, Robin.
Thank you. In 1994, Chris decided to go back to Japan and he also began working for ECW. During this time, he gained notoriety as the Crippler.
Is that for his finisher?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
Makes sense.
I didn't do a lot of the wrestling part. November 2nd, 1994, Chris allegedly broke another wrestler, Sabu's neck, in the opening moments of the match. Chris was upset that he might have seriously injured another wrestler.
Yeah, Sabu is pretty big in ECW, like, you know, history. Big figure there. I know that from the video game, the SmackDown vs. Raw vs. ECW one.
In 1995, Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko won the ECW Tag Team Championship, which was Chris's first American title.
What about the one before? Was that New Japan?
That was, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Chris was forced to leave ECW after his visa expired and Paul Heyman forgot to renew it.
Really?
He wouldn't do that with Brock, surely.
Well, Brock's American, so...
Yeah, but yeah, apparently he forgot to renew his visa, so...
That's awkward by Heyman.
Chris left to enter the US and toured Japan until he received a call from WCW.
Right. So he's been in WCW before and this is his returning...
Yeah, okay. So New Japan and WCW, as you probably know, have a working relationship. Well, they did have a working relationship. I don't know about
now. I did know that, but WCW doesn't exist, Robin.
Okay, moving on. And because of a talent exchange program, Chris signed with WCW in late 1995, along with some others, I didn't catch their names, but to work as part of an angle.
Okay. So they were brought over for a specific kind of purpose.
Yeah, he started out as a member of the Cruiserweights.
Right, I know we'll get to it, but WCW's Cruiserweight division was famously not the best.
No, so what I understood from the documentary and from my research was that Chris sort of had the feeling that they were interested in big, tall, beefy,
yeah,
muscly,
like your Hulk Hogan, like your Rock, Nash, yeah.
Was interested in them and not the little guys that weren't quite...
I think that's just a figure of, like, what wrestling is now. Like, we're quite, interested by smaller guys now.
I mean, look at Rey Mysterio.
Or even further than that, like, someone like Adam Cole. Mm. Or even someone like Otis, who is big, but not...
Otis is a beautiful man, and you should respect our Money in the Bank winner. Sorry, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it.
He is the worst.
After impressing others in the industry, and Kevin Sullivan, who, remember, is with Nancy...
Yeah.
So
Nancy and Chris aren't together at the moment?
No, she's...
They just did the managing thing.
She's just married to this other guy, but they, like, worked in the same companies together, so they've crossed paths.
Okay.
So after impressing others in the industry and Kevin Sullivan, Chris was approached by Ric Flair and became a member of the Four Horsemen with Flair, Arn Anderson, and Brian Pillman.
Yeah. Got a famous staple there.
The only name I recognise was Ric Flair. That shows my knowledge.
Brian Pillman did the gun segment with, he was H or Rock or someone like that. Maybe Stone Cold. We had the gun on the thing. He poured it in a house. All right, moving on.
When Brian Pillman left the company for WWF, Chris was placed into an ongoing feud with Kevin Sullivan. Again, Nancy's husband.
Yeah.
The two began having storyline violent confrontations during pay-per-views, and Kevin booked a feud where Chris was to have an affair with Kevin's off-screen wife, Nancy.
This sounds really Edge Lita territory right now.
The on-screen relationship evolved into a real-life affair off-screen.
Right, yep.
It is often joked, and this is what I talked to Lewis about yesterday from the PG retrospective, is often joked that Kevin Sullivan booked his own divorce.
Yeah. probably shouldn't be doing those sort of bookings on wrestling. It really is just redneck TV, like redneck home and away, isn't it?
Yeah, so they were literally like all... I guess it was kind of like the Lana, Bobby Lashley even thing, where they were just sort of...
Well, not so much. It'd be just... It's Edge and Lita, right?
Yeah, well, they were just all over each other.
Instead that,
in
like...
In promos and stuff. And then Kevin was like, yeah, this is a great feud. And then...
Even someone like Stephanie and Triple H had the same sort of thing where they're like off-screen, like... Sorry, on-screen relationship led to an off-screen sort of like thing. Also, traveling all the time together, I assume that... You get connections through there just by being, like, you know, in close rooms, talking about storylines, that sort of thing.
1997. So both Chris and Nancy's previous marriages are broken down. So Chris was married originally first, had to his first, he's got two children to his first marriage. And they began living together. Evidence of Kevin's abuse towards Nancy surfaced, and in a match between Chris and Kevin, they started going at each other, which appeared to other people as more real than it was.
Yeah, it was no longer faked. It was just
an actual ball. And Chris actually burst Kevin's eardrum.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Kevin denies any abuse. He also didn't want to take part in the documentary The Dark Side of the Ring, which is fine, but
yeah.
So take with that
what once you, again it's alleged until it's proven.
So Chris had two children from his first marriage, David and Megan. Nancy had been married twice before meeting Chris. Nancy made her final appearance as woman, and no explanation was really given for where she went.
What was the actual explanation?
There was no explanation given. She just went off the screen.
No, but like, is there like an off-screen like reason? Or?
She wanted to start a family with Chris.
Okay, fair enough.
Sort of like Becky Lynch at the moment.
I assume Becky would come back. Yeah. It'd be more like Ronda, right?
Yeah. In 2000, Chris and Nancy's son Daniel was born on February 25th. Chris and Nancy married in November. And Chris doted over his children and reportedly loved being a father.
Okay.
So, all good.
Do we know any update on, like, how many head-related injuries he's had so far? Or?
No, so I will discuss later a comment he makes to a neuroscientist, but there isn't actually a number, like, a full number given. But as you know from watching wrestling, a lot of older wrestling, you know that head shots, chair shots were pretty...
Especially with his finisher being jump off the top rope with my head.
And headbutting people.
Concussion wasn't really a big thing back then, was it? Like, we knew it existed, but did people really know the damage of, like...
The conversation of CTE and things like that was not... Same as with Aaron Hernandez and NFL, the conversation wasn't happening.
Yeah.
In 2000, Chris started to become unhappy working for WCW, and WCW attempted to keep him by placing the vacant World Heavyweight Championship on him.
Oh.
Chris had stated that he was unhappy about the way he'd been treated, extending back to the 1980s, where he wasn't a big, strong, tall wrestler.
So he's still holding grudges from them underlooking his technical talent,
and not feeling like he was being pushed.
Yeah,
his talent
to the same place as like. Is it what year was this? 90.
He's in the 2000s.
We're in like the NWO sort of Hogan dominated era.
But he's saying back in the 1980s, he even felt like.
Yeah. Well. It's just a common theme then, right?
Due to disagreements with management, Chris left the company with his best friend Eddie Guerrero.
Yep.
Dean Malenko and Perry Saturn, which forfeited the heavyweight championship.
Okay.
WCW decided not to acknowledge this title as an official title reign.
I can see why.
Chris headed to the WWF.
Yep.
Which is now, for anyone who doesn't know, is now the WWE.
Thanks to the panda place.
In 2003, Nancy filed for divorce from Chris.
Oh.
She claimed he would break and throw furniture. She later dropped this and the restraining order she'd filed.
So we're already seeing...
We're seeing problems in the relationship with aggression and...
Yeah, lashing out.
But apparently called Nancy's sister non-stop. It's shown in the documentary here. Chris called Nancy's sister non-stop to, like... let him talk to her, and then when she finally let him talk to her, they had just made up somehow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's not look into that too much.
2004, Chris wins the Royal Rumble by eliminating... Do you know? Who do you eliminate?
H? Huh? Michaels?
No.
Cena?
No. Well, it's the Big Show.
Really? Oh, okay.
By eliminating the Big Show, and he earned a shot at the title at WrestleMania 20. He and Shawn Michaels are the only two entrants to a WWE Royal Rumble to begin at number one.
Yeah, because I know every time they talk about that, they say he's one. Shawn Michaels is like one of the men who have entered at number one.
Yeah, they don't. They don't mention the other.
Yeah, I think Mysterio was 2-30. Someone can correct me, but I'm pretty
Brock
sure.
Brock Lesnar was one to... When did he get eliminated?
No, he definitely didn't win.
No, I know he didn't win, but...
How
long was Brock in there for a while? Who's in there?
No.
Like 14, 15.
That's not long, though.
Yeah, I know.
Typical Iron Man for that match is like 30, 40.
Brock was just F5 and everyone.
I think he just got recency bias.
On March 14th, Chris won the World Heavyweight Championship when Triple H tapped out to Chris's submission move, the Crippler Crossface.
Was that the triple threat with Michaels?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Chris Benoit and Edge also won the World Tag Team Championship, making Chris a double champion.
Yeah.
In August, Chris lost his title to...
Randy Orton.
Yep.
The youngest ever. Because I know they don't mention that either. When Randy won his like youngest ever title thing, it was against Benoit, and they just don't show it.
Yeah, because that was in the Ruthless Aggression documentary when Randy won his title.
It also starts the feud between H and Orton, which is like a big feud as well, like the breaking up of Evolution.
Yeah.
So we're into my wheelhouse of wrestling now. I'm getting there.
All right, we're in 2005. Is that a bit better for you?
I played the 07 game.
November 13, 2005. Throughout his career, Chris had maintained a very close and loving friendship with another wrestler, Eddie Guerrero.
Yep.
On November 13th, 2005, Eddie died in the arms of his nephew, Chavo Guerrero Jr. of heart disease.
Chavo!
Of heart disease. Chris was inconsolable.
Yep.
And close friends said he never fully recovered from losing Eddie.
I imagine, like, it's his person he's grown up with and now. I know Eddie's passing, like, it's not only just fans, but people within the industry were just shocked by it.
Yeah, like I know you would have seen it the night after when they run the tribute show, and Chris just,
yeah,
he just can't get his words out. He's too emotional.
And that also, I don't know much about CT, but does emotional, like just like a big emotional event like that, does that do anything for the
emotional responses? Yeah,
yeah.
They're unable to
comprehend,
regulate, deal with.
Yeah.
So after Eddie died, Nancy said that's when she started seeing that something wasn't right with Chris.
Yeah.
Chris was brought a journal so he could talk to Eddie. Nancy...
Is that to kind of help him express his emotions?
Yeah, so he could write to Eddie and tell him, you know, how much he missed Eddie.
Yeah, I feel like that's a common thing.
Nancy was worried, though, that it wasn't healthy mentally or physically that Chris returned to work so early after Eddie's death.
Any reason for that, or was he just doing it to kind of...
So the thing with Chris Benoit that I learned in The Dark Side of the Ring is that it didn't matter what was wrong with Chris, whether something had happened to him, whether he was injured, whether he was persistent to performing and doing his job, essentially.
Yeah.
So there was a story where, I can't remember who he had a... He kicked someone in the face. He was doing it like a kick thing.
And, a kick thing.
And he like missed it by something. And actually, it contacted or... I can't remember completely. But he was so upset that he punished himself by doing 500 burpees. That was his punishment because it wasn't good enough for him that...
That's some Charlie Stewart shit.
that he'd missed. So he's very dedicated to what he wanted to do and wanted to achieve.
I guess, like, it's still probably a theme, but just, like, people returning from injuries too early is a very common theme in WWE.
Yeah, and... Chris just went straight back to it after Eddie died.
Yeah.
And didn't really...
heal properly or emotionally deal with it.
Like, Chris Jericho was telling a story about how at Eddie's funeral, Chris just literally cried that much into his shoulder that it went through the suit jacket and then into his actual shirt.
Jesus.
So, obviously...
Probably should seek some further help there.
Probably wasn't dealing with that, and as a male, you'd probably understand that being
that's
a celebrity...
A whole can of worms.
Yeah, being a celebrity, being a male...
I think also CTE as well.
Seeking. Yeah, well, we don't know when the CTE was start. We'd imagine by this point it was setting in.
Well, you can probably see using, like, just that he can't deal with emotions properly and then, you know, it's a side effect.
On June 19th, 2007, Chris wrestled his final match against Elijah Burke, which Chris won.
Imagine your last match being against Elijah Burke. Jesus.
During this weekend, Chris wasn't present for the house shows. He told WWE officials his wife and son were vomiting blood from food poisoning. When he didn't show up to the pay-per-view, viewers were told he was unable to compete due to a family emergency. The crowd spent the match chanting Benoit. And Stephanie McMahon later revealed that Chris was booked to beat CM Punk for the heavyweight championship.
What year was this?
In 2007.
CM Punk?
Yep.
Okay. I think, like, yeah, that works.
I don't know who they put in place of Chris, but...
I assume just no one beat him.
Yeah. June 24th, 2007, Chavo Guerrero Jr. stated that he received two texts, one from Chris and one from Nancy's phones, both stated the same thing. The dogs are in the enclosed pool area and the back doors are open. Then he received another text with Chris's address. So that's strange because Chavo obviously knew where Chris and Nancy lived. And that, yeah.
Would that be a dementia thing from the CTE or...?
I don't know what... Yeah, it's hard to sort of anticipate what frame of mind Chris was sort of in when he sent those sort of texts, if he was in some sort of delirium or...
Yeah.
Or he meant to send it to someone else. I
guess we'll never know.
June 25th, 2007, police entered the Benoit home in Fayetteville, Georgia, after WWE employees requested a welfare check. They discovered the bodies of Chris, Nancy, and Daniel Benoit at around 2:30 p.m.
How old was Daniel?
Seven. I want to say seven. Yeah, okay. 2000. I'd say seven. Yeah, six or seven.
Jesus.
So, a bit of a trigger warning here. I'm about to describe how they died.
Murder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both Nancy and Daniel were face down. Nancy was wrapped in a blanket. Chris had hung himself from a weight machine. It was determined that Chris was the offender.
How?
They just ruled that there was no one else that... Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, they just ruled that...
Okay.
It was not a... It was a homicide, but the homicide perpetrator was Chris.
I assume there's conspiracies sparing from he didn't do it, right? Before we get into it.
Probably.
Yeah.
Over 3 days, Chris had killed his family before committing suicide. Nancy was bound before the killing, and Daniel was drugged with Xanax before he was strangled. WWE cancelled the show for June 25th and replaced it with a tribute show dedicated to the life of Benoit. The general reaction was sadness, knowing that the whole Benoit family had passed away.
Yeah.
Many of the superstars praised Chris and his work. I mean,
including Vince, famously.
Vince, right? I mean, as they still do, but...
I know Vince was in a storyline at the time where he was...
I was about to touch on that, yeah. Where he was meant to be...
Dead. Blew up in a car explosion, and he actually came back and broke that storyline to talk about Chris's incident. So, wait, is this a day after?
So it's the same night. So there was meant to be a show the night the bodies were discovered.
Yeah. So this is before the police figured out that it was probably Chris who did it?
They'd just been provided with the information that Benoit had died.
Right, okay.
So WWE drew criticism for this because the whole story wasn't clear when the show was aired.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, they typically want to, someone that big in the industry. As soon as if news breaks and people realise that WWE did a show knowing Chris passed away,
and didn't just, they would have been criticised for that. They just didn't acknowledge it. Yeah. And as I wrote in,
there was never a wrestler called Chris Benoit.
Yeah. Apparently, there was never a wrestler called Roman Reigns as well at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing, right? Like we said earlier, what are WWE meant to do in a situation like that? They're a $1 billion company. This is a big scandal.
It's all over the news that a WWE wrestler has died.
Especially when you start bringing in factors of his concussion.
And people know that most WWE episodes are live. They're not pre-taped.
Yeah, and then, like, Vince starts getting into trouble when, like, if more people find out about it. Like, because wrestling is still kind of niche-ish. Like,
yeah. I mean, as you said, I feel like people would have called him out and been like, oh, but Chris just died and you're just doing a show and you're just pretending like it didn't happen.
Like, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. We live in a timeline where... it wasn't Chris who did it, and WWE don't cover it, we would be criticising that.
As Brody pointed out, during this time, Vince McMahon, the CEO of WWE, for anyone who's not familiar...
The man whose walk is the most powerful vibe I've ever seen.
...was involved in a storyline where he was dead, and had to break, for anyone who isn't a wrestling fan, it's what is called kayfabe. As we know, wrestling isn't real, but...
Kayfabe is the illusion or understanding that these events could be real. Yeah.
But unfortunately, Benoit dying was very real.
Yeah.
According to Matthew...
Or was it a work?
Ooh. According to Matthew Randazzo, author of Ring of Hell, the story of Chris Benoit and the fall of pro wrestling, evidence indicated it was a brutal and vicious murder. On the Friday morning, Chris and Daniel had done a barbecue together. But then on Friday evening, there was an altercation between Chris and Nancy. Chris restrained Nancy.
Wait, so who's this coming from?
The author of this book. I assume he's...
Where's he getting this information
from? Yeah, I assume he's got sources to back his information up.
I feel like I'd rather just hear those sources though. Like, yeah. If he's having a barbecue with Chris and he's like, oh, and then this happened, like,
Yeah, I feel like it was more to it, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, apparently Chris and Nancy had an
argument. I'm just a bit uncomfortable with, like, him just guy, like, recreating the events based on, like... Unless
I assume
like,
he had sources.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris restrained Nancy with duct tape and then used a telephone cord to strangle her.
We'll get to that in a sec, Andrew, by the way. We'll come back to that comment.
She had a Bible placed next to her body. On the Saturday, it is assumed that Chris gave Daniel Xanax and suffocated him in his room. A Bible was placed next to him.
Jesus.
On the Sunday, Chris made searches on the internet, which police found. One of which was the...
Pornhub.com.
One of which was the quickest and most painless way to commit suicide.
And he chose hanging. Would that be the quickest and most painless? I feel like there's a lot better ways.
Or I think it was either that or it was Chris, he looked up the easiest way to hang yourself. Yeah, I don't want to go into that.
Yeah.
There was no indication that anything in Chris's body had contributed to his violent behaviour, which a lot of speculation was to do with what was known as roid rage.
Yeah.
Because some wrestlers were...
Some.
just some? Just Hulk Hogan.
just Hulk Hogan?
We're taking steroids.
Wrestlers doing steroids? Never heard of. There wasn't a whole scandal with Vince about steroids.
What are steroids? Andrew did comment, I think Nancy's ex killed them both.
Yeah, I'll say, I've probably covered that in the theory.
Which ex?
I'm assuming it's the one with
Kevin Sullivan. Yeah. Yeah, so pretty much he drugged his son, and he apparently had a bottle of wine when he went down to...
Yeah. May as well.
So I guess, yeah. Prior to the tragedy, which comes back to our roid rage... Chris had been given illegal steroids, which weren't in compliance...
Sorry, legal or illegal?
Illegal.
Okay.
The steroids, which weren't in compliance with WWE's Talent Wellness Program in 2006. Nancy Benoit had stated before her death that the drug treatment plan was a joke.
For WWE?
Yep.
I mean, like...
Vince McMahon stated on television that steroids had nothing to do with the crimes.
Yeah, but like, and instead it was, would, right?
And then instead it was calculated and premeditated.
So he's really throwing... I mean, I know Chris is a murderer, but he's really throwing Chris under the bus here, isn't he?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Was there an investigation done into steroids in Chris's body, or...?
As I said, there was nothing found.
Yeah.
The toxicology report found nothing, but Vince was like, nope, don't know anything.
There's no universe where Vince pays them off, is there? I don't want to, like, make him the big villain here, but there's no universe where he's like, oh, pretend these results don't exist, right? Like, how biased are the police?
After the event, former wrestler Christopher Nowinsk.
Do your best.
Nowinsk.
Sure, they look like letters.
He was now a neuroscientist. So a bit of a change of a career there. Just
he was probably spurred on by this, right?
Contacted Chris's father, Michael, and suggested years of trauma to his son's brain through head impact and headshots may have affected his actions and decisions in a process.
So some pretty early seeds. CTE. Was it known as CTE back then, or was this like the early seeds?
No, it was known.
Okay.
I did try and use CTE's full name in the Aaron Hernandez episode, but I'm not going to try again. So I'm just going to go with CTE.
Okay. I think people can, if they're curious, look it up.
CTE is a progressive degenerative...
Yep,
brain disease that appears to be started by ongoing trauma to the head.
So, any it's like concussions would be the main ways.
Concussions, head shots by chairs,
tackles. Oh, okay. Keep going. I'm gonna have to edit this part out, but keep going.
Scary. Yeah. Sorry. Just a comment by Andrew. The scary thing is, yeah, wrestling is fake, but all those bumps Chris is doing wrestling every day, it still makes me cringe when I see wrestlers take crazy. See, I was just watching. You can edit this out if you have to. But I was just watching Undertaker The Last Ride. And in his match with Brock Lesnar, where he lost the streak, and I was talking to you about this last night, he was concussed. He actually stated afterwards he doesn't remember that match. He doesn't remember losing that streak. He came off pretty much crawling into Vince's arms with concussion. So, I mean...
I think it's pretty ignorant to say anything, like, especially WWE, that the people aren't real athletes or it's not real. Like, the things, I mean, they're doing are dramatized and acted, but, like,
what
they're
is still Mark taking... Mark yeah. Calloway's 50-plus.
Yeah, they're still taking hits, they're still taking bumps, they're still exerting physical energy. You can pull bones... you can pull muscles, you can, you know, you can take a lot of damage. Like, John Cena didn't just tear his pectoral muscle?
Yep.
Got the ad. He didn't just tear that by acting. Like, it's a serious physical endeavor. Like,
I mean, the other story that was being told in the Last Ride episode last night was that... everyone who's a wrestling fan would know the Mick Foley through the Hell in a Cell cage. And when that occurred, Mark... Well, the Undertaker. Sorry, breaking kayfabe. Mark said that... Mark said he had a broken foot.
Yeah.
And that Mick Foley said, you know, I was put through so much hell, but there was Undertaker up there.
I think a lot of people, especially famously CM Punk, like, has come out and criticised WWE's, like, you know, health, like... kind of procedures and, like, their doctors and
well,
that,
even like, we talked before about, like, mental health, like, after Eddie died.
Yeah. I guess it's just... Because they're independent contractors, right? Like, they're not technically employees. Like, they just have contracts. So, there's a lack of, like, health plans and that sort of thing for them.
Mm.
Like, it's quite an industry that it's probably should be looked at a bit deeper into, like, what employee rights should be. I know, companies like AEW, like, I heard this, I don't know if it's true, but they have implemented fair wages for both women and males. Like, it's just something that's happening there.
I'd ignore that comment.
Anyway.
Now, we do a bit of a, more of a discussion about CTE in the Aaron Hernandez episode as well, because yeah. that was... argued a contributing factor.
I think our next case we're doing
OJ. So there's an argument for OJ too.
With CTE.
But Lewinsky states that Chris Benoit had said to him 6 months prior to his death, and this is what you asked me before, that he'd lost count of how many concussions he'd had over the years.
That's not a good thing.
Chris Jericho states that the attitude was in pro wrestling that if you had a concussion, you shook it off.
It's still present in some sports, right? Like, people believe that AFL players, for instance, are bubble wrapped and, you know, we shouldn't be so pussy with our athletes, but, like,
we absolutely should
be. We see the side effects of when we don't, and when our, you know, we have, like, things that are barbaric, like making a man take, especially, like, someone like, I think there's a famous name, Mick Foley, just constant headshots with
yeah,
a chair.
Yeah, I think he showed me that. And
where
it just
the chair
makes,
physically
like
bends.
Andrew was just saying, like, seeing headshots now just makes you cringe knowing
yeah.
what...
Like, I think we can still enjoy something like wrestling and or like AFL or sports like that. We can still enjoy them whilst taking care of our players because at the end of the day,
they're
people and they're not just things we throw at in like a coliseum. Like, we need to take care of them.
I don't know what the answer is, but like with sports with NFL and pro wrestling, I mean, there's never going to be an avoidance of trauma to the head. I don't think that's by the nature of the
no, but you can like okay, I think our friend Jack from PG Wrestling Retrospect, shout out like
Satan stop.
No, they're not the steel chairs used back in like them were actual metal.
This he's talking about I thought he was talking about our chairs.
No.
Sorry.
But like Jack said, you don't stop those things, but you mitigate the risk as much as you can and then have an understanding that people who partake in that career path or that hobby have like a risk there. So with AFL, if a player gets knocked out, you take them off the field for a certain amount of time, they get checkups and they have to be cleared to go back on.
But
same would be for NFL.
I think it's hard as well because we don't know how many headshots it takes.
But that's the thing, you limit as much as you can, then you let people know about the risk. So, with wrestling, so for instance, they instead of using wood chairs, or like, I mean, you still take an impact from wood, it doesn't change anything, but limiting headshots to the head, for one, limiting the amount of spots to do with the head, no more, you know, especially with your neck and that, no more spots with that, having more training around how to take those bumps more safely. I know with F1, for instance, like a sport where a lot of G-forces on their necks. They do a lot of neck workouts now, so they don't get later on problems in that area. Wearing fire suits and that thing. Like, there's a lot of ways you can mitigate risk whilst also still enjoying the sport. Some people think it takes a bit too much away from it, but I think the argument is I'd rather take a little bit away from sports like that and be able to talk to my heroes.
Well, that's what
before they're the age of 35.
Well, that's right? What Undertaker Mark Calloway says as well. He says, you know, he doesn't know when, you know, how much was going to be too much. Yeah. So for him to have that match with Roman Reigns and kind of put away the streak, kind of end that to limit how much he participates in WWE.
But I think he's well within his right to take that risk. But I think it's up to places like WWE and us as consumers to say, okay, but let's try to limit it as much as possible while still putting out an enjoyable product. Which I think AFL does really well at the moment. I know people complained about protected spaces and all that sort of thing, but it's for the player's best interest, and that's the only thing that really matters.
So, Chris died at the age of 40, just for context. He was 40 when he died.
That's nothing.
And he was... Well, there's context as to why I told you his age. His case was severe for someone of his age. Areas damaged in his brain included his ability to manage emotional responses. His brain resembled that of an 85-year-old with Alzheimer's.
And that's just a side effect.
And that's very similar to Aaron Hernandez, who died when he was in his... 20s.
20s? Yeah, he was 20.
20. In 20-ish. His late 20s.
Yeah.
And his brain was almost triple what it should have been. So people that are CTE conspiracy theorists, say what you want, but...
Bro, why are you going to call out your boy on every single podcast?
Sorry.
Just have a go at Sam Newman now and get it out of your system.
I used to love Sam Newman, and it makes me disappointed every day that I can't appreciate him. Vicky Guerrero questions whether Chris's death and his crime was his incapacity to deal with Eddie and CTE combined.
Yeah, it's probably just a mixture, yeah.
Chris Jericho says the day Eddie died, things began spiraling for Chris Benoit. Nancy's sister agrees what happened was possibly a compilation of alcohol, drugs, CTE, and grief.
Yeah.
So,
what would drive a man to do that? Like, it's not just people don't just kill on a whim. Like, it's got to be a multitude of factors.
No, Vince McMahon, it was not premeditated.
It was premeditated. It was pretty sloppy, right? Like, why would you text someone and be like, "Hi, I did this"?
Yeah, I mean, it was for Chris. Knowing he had house shows, it was going to be obvious that he was going to be, but I guess his brain wasn't sort of, but he knew he was going to get
it. But if his brain wasn't good, then how did he premeditate?
Exactly. I think some of the argument comes from the fact he wrote supposedly he wrote a suicide note. The content hasn't been discussed, but that's where the premeditation argument comes from, that he was able to write that and...
Yeah, but like...
And he was able to drug his son.
I guess, but like, he probably... The thing with CT is that you don't really...
Well, the other thing as well, like we discussed with the Aaron Hernandez episode, paranoias.
Yeah.
A very big symptom, and...
Especially if he's already having problems with his partner, and then he's scared about her leaving or something happening there, and he just...
And he already had fear with WWE, like when he was starting out, that he was never going to be one of the big...
The big boys?
Big boys.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, shout out to the big boys.
Chris's death led to institutional changes in the WWE, but as we've discussed, maybe not enough.
I mean...
I'll finish what I was saying. The subject of CTE is now something...
Oh, sorry, Sam, we're talking about Chris Benoit.
Chris Benoit, WWE. Wrestling.
Slash more CTE stuff.
So Chris's death led to institutional changes. The subject of CTE is now something that is widely discussed, and headshots involving chairs specifically... are now addressed to protect the athlete.
I know you get fined for it. You can't blade or, like, force yourself to bleed either on the... Well, I think that's just a side effect of being PG.
Yeah, I thought that was, yeah.
Probably tied to it as well, like loss of blood thing.
Because I don't... Don't complete... Maybe you can give me some insight here.
I'll try. Maybe one of our fans can.
I don't completely understand how wrestlers formulate their matches before going into it, whether they have a discussion about things they want to do to play it out.
Yeah, they talk about spots.
Yeah, I was going to say, surely...
They also talk, so you know when they lock up?
Yeah.
They talk about it during that as well. I know John Cena famously is very loud when he discusses it, but you can call you spots
too
or...
Much.
Yeah.
Thanks, Botchamania. Oh, thank you, Sam. Yes, it's a good mic.
So, like, you know, like, when they lock up, they talk about their moves or... you know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I feel like nowadays if Vince was like, hey, we want to use a chair in this match, then...
Well, they don't probably talk to Vince. They probably have like a booker or they have someone like that. I don't think it's Vince in
particular.
Well,
no, but I feel like they're able to say, we're not doing that. It's, no.
Well, I mean, probably. Like, you could probably refuse to do anything. Like, even at work, but if then, they said, hey, do this, you could say
what
no.
Oh, that was pre-Benoit, wasn't it? The Foley Rock match where...
Oh, yeah, that was the early 2000s / 90s, yeah. Yeah. Are you talking about the one where Mick Foley takes way too many chair shots and it looks like the worst?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes me uncomfortable.
They didn't talk for ages after that match. I think Jack was telling me that.
Cactus Jack?
Sure.
Right.
Make sure you listen to Behind the Buckle.
No, that's Jack.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Which, so many Jacks. There is now debate about whether Chris should be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. David Benoit states that he wants people to recognise his stepmom Nancy's contribution and talent rather than how her life ended.
Yeah, but there's going to be an asterisk for next to that, right? Like, the problem is that, once again, I've said many times, but WWE are a billion-dollar business, and like they don't really want... they want to keep this scandal away from as many people as possible. It's the same as the... Owen Hart thing, right? Like, they don't want people knowing about things like this. They don't want people knowing about their steroid scandal. They don't want people knowing about the CM Punk,
pipe bomb.
Not the pipe bomb. His, history of doctors and that.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want scandals getting out because they're pushing forward this image of, like, a squeaky clean company.
Family friendly.
Yeah, exactly. They don't want people knowing, I think they had, like, you know, about, like, their mistreatment of, like, certain people. They don't want to know that. They want to keep it as family-friendly as possible.
Do you think the PG rating... When was the PG rating came in? I was going to say post-Benoit.
You should know. You're a big listener of the PG Wrestling Retrospect. Available now on Apples.
Apples. But do you think the PG rating, in your opinion, helps with issues like this that were obviously... Obviously steroid abuse, that scandal ended that sort
of... I think irregardless of the PG rating, I think that WWE would implement changes just based on... They had to, because there would have been backlash.
Do you think they could have implemented... Do you think it could have been... Or do you think
implemented earlier?
Well, what I'm saying is, do you think that... Because Eddie was obviously a factor and other things, but do you think if they were earlier in...
I think hindsight's 2020.
Yeah.
I think we're talking about... Like, we're sitting here with all the knowledge and understanding what happens, but at the time, it just wasn't a big thing, concussions. Like, people knew about it. They didn't know the effect of, like, CT or that sort of thing. I mean, it's pretty easy for us to sit here on our, you know, 2020 high horse and be like, oh, they should have done this,
should have done
this
a long time ago, but...
Yeah, but at the moment...
The CTE research wasn't there either.
Yeah, exactly. I think what they're doing now is good. Like, they're obviously trying, they're obviously making an effort, and that's the main thing, right? They listen and, you know, they keep improving.
I mean, the bottom line is that... Wrestling isn't fake, unfortunately, and they do...
I mean, like, that's the thing, right?
They do get injured, as I've discussed with Undertaker.
That's the thing. The weird thing about wrestling is it sits on this really tight, balancing line between it's real action, but it's fake product. Like, it's like a sitcom, but, people are actually physically interacting with each other, and that's the difference. Like... You wouldn't criticize, like, Days of Our Lives or, like, Home and Away for being fake, right? You know it is. But people do the same for wrestling, and they use that as an excuse for why the product's not good.
But there's still...
That makes people, like, people jaded to, like... That's why, like, doing chair shots ahead and doing, like, crazy big things...
But if it was so fake, like, why, you know, and they're not real athletes... quote unquote.
Yeah, but you're talking about like a...
I know, but I'm just saying, you know, think about, you know, what I was saying about Chris before, you know, he hated that he missed that, I think it was a kick to the head. He hated he missed it by like an inch.
Yeah.
And he, you know...
But the people who are saying stuff like, oh, it's not real, like, they're just saying it because it's an easy attack on a product they don't like.
Yeah, I mean, these...
It'd be like people who criticize sport being like, it's just guys kicking a ball around. It's like, yeah, that's an easy criticism.
Alright, last question. Nancy Benoit in the WWE Hall of Fame? For or against?
I wish she was, but I see why she's not. The same with Chris.
Okay.
It's easy. I think, yeah. No,
but Chris didn't kill anyone. Oh, sorry. Nancy didn't kill anyone.
Yeah, but she's still tired. If you do a Google search of Nancy Benoit, what comes up?
Yeah, Chris.
And that's
the issue. And what the WWE don't like discussing.
Yeah, and that's the issue, right? She will always be tied to that. And that's just going to... Like Andrew said, was it Jack? It was Jack. She's one of the, one of the best managers of all time, he believes, and that legacy is just...
And the sad thing is, before I did this research, I didn't know any of that. I just knew Chris and what happened, and...
It's like how you can't talk about people like Sharon Tate, OJ, without acknowledging Aaron Hernandez. Like, you can't talk about their careers without that big asterisk
stigma
being like,
of how and
why. And that just sucks, and there's no way past that, really.
And I think that applies to things like we're saying at the start of the episode, like separating art from...
Yeah, and you get it as well, right? Like, when people talk about your... like, Essendon football, there's always that... But there's always going to be
reasons why we're not doing an Essendon drug saga episode, because I will get emotional and aggressive.
But there's always going to be the asterisk of, like, they did this thing, and that's always going to be tied
to
them.
Like, I always say on social media, no, Essendon might win a game, and that's fantastic, and they might be doing really well. Like, even if Essendon made a grand final again, I just almost 100% guarantee you all the comments are going to be back on the drugs.
Yeah,
back on the...
and that's the thing, right? Like, we never get to talk about these legacies of people without that asterisk being there, and there's no way
and
to
it's hard
that.
To be. It's hard to be a fan in that respect of their sport or their music or their...
If you say you're a Chris Benoit fan, there's always that, like, one person thinks you're doing it just to be edgy, right? If you say Chris Benoit is, like, your favourite wrestler, it's like, oh...
Like, you even said to me the other day that you like Chris Benoit's entrance music.
It's
you think
great,
it's,
yeah. Our Lady Peace.
But it feels like such a, you know...
Of course, it's a taboo topic. Like, I didn't even know OJ was a famous sports player.
Yeah,
I just knew him as the guy who probably killed...
I think, his NFL career is well and truly overshadowed.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do to stop that being a factor.
Whether you think he's guilty or innocent, you know, no one thinks of OJ's NFL career, unless you're, I guess, a diehard NFL. Yeah.
Speaking of that, we'll cover that in our probably next episode of OJ.
Yeah, we'll be going chasing down the freeway in our Broncos to...
Do you know, tie this all together, do you know WWE used that
footage?
They used
that footage for what was it?
It was for Roddy Piper versus Jake the Snake, I believe. I might be wrong. Anyway, I think that does it for this episode. I've been Brody.
I've been Robin.
And thanks for joining us. Thanks for everyone joining us on live stream. Thanks for all your questions.
Don't forget to send us in your ideas of cases that you'd love us to cover. We do have...
Send us some feet pick.
Feet picks. We do have the next 2 weeks covered. But beyond that, we are taking suggestions and ideas.
We do take bribes as well to push yours up the order.
Strawberry Freddo frogs are a big love.
Yeah, pictures of pets.
Quokkas. You love quokkas.
Send us pictures of quokkas and we'll do your request. Anyway,
thanks guys.
Thanks for listening. Bye.